Vibe
Machine.
Hi, and welcome to Undercover's podcast. I'm Josh Kiff, and this is my podcast all about album artwork. It's one of my favorite obsessions. I love how art affects music. This episode and the two following it are with Callum Preston, Australian artist with world-class pedigree. Many of the acts Callum has collaborated with have become well-known acts globally, most notably Parkway Drive and D's Nuts. But Callum has a career that stretches past the punk and hardcore worlds and has worked with some of the biggest up-and-coming acts in Australia that you will surely be hearing about outside of our part of the globe very soon. I'm talking Alex Leahy, Luca Brasi, to name just a few. As always, we begin at the beginning. Where did Callum get his start in art, and how did that lead into music?
Vibe
Machine.
I guess it. I mean, I always just drew stuff as a kid. Pretty standard, you know, that classic cliche story. Like, oh, I always drew pictures. It's like, well, every kid draws pictures, but I really didn't think art was even an option for me to be doing work in a work setting. I actually dropped my art subjects by the end of high school. I didn't know that much about what I really wanted to do. I was a decent student, but the one thing that probably overshadowed all of my younger years was, playing music. So I started playing the drums when I was, in year seven. So that's like what, 12 years old. By middle of that year, we'd already formed, you know, multiple different bands and had all these ideas about what we're going to do. So we'd play, there's videos of me playing, you know, Green Day when I come around with my like high school band at my year seven graduation. You know, nice. Like, we're all wearing our, everyone's wearing their best like Mambo shirt that we've, you know, if we're gonna have to wear a fancy shirt, I want to wear one with a weird like three-headed alligator and a bong on it.
And a dog farting. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. So music, like playing music, you know, from that age, and I was into music before that, but that in high school, really by, year nine, I realized like, oh, there's, you know, playing music leads to all of these things. So I started going to all ages shows, and being in bands, we just needed a flyer or a poster, or, you know, I think I painted the front of my drum kit, like the skin on the bass drum, like 10 different times in that period. I wanted a better brand name drum kit. So I'd be like getting stickers from, there'd be like Ultimate Drummers Weekend, like these sort of like trade shows. And I'd go and get stickers and cut out the logos and stick them over my shitty drum kit brand so that it looked like it was a better one. And like, so the art and the music kind of came hand in hand. Cause as I started playing in bands, I was like, well, I can draw or I can cut and paste. I can make these flyers. So that really, that side of the art is, you know, I was doing that in high school all alongside dropping my art subjects, which is kind of crazy now that I think about it, but I really just didn't see it as a career. Not that I took on anything that really set me on a career path, but I just was like, whatever, studio art, don't worry about it. I did photography, but I had this bank of flyers that I'd been making, and not just flyers, but I'd make stickers and t-shirts, and we did a couple of CDs and EPs, and so each of them had their own covers and then internals, and they were terrible, like they're all rubbish, but we actually, just to put it, to put a time frame on myself, we released a VHS, like for my high school band. We like filmed a bunch of shows and like gave it out to our friends, and I made a cover for that, which was probably quite influenced by, somewhere between like that Incubus Make Yourself album artwork and, you know, some other kind of era. So it's definitely that early 2000s period. I finished high school in 2002. So yeah, upon listening to your other episodes and the people talking, I'm like, wow, these people are really informed a lot of my design ideas before I really knew what designing was, I guess. yes. So just being around other musicians leads to that stuff. So, in high school, I was making my own flyers, but then by the time you sort of finish high school, you know, I get to playing in pubs and stuff. I'm meeting other bands. One of the first bands to ever have me do a t-shirt for them was Parkway Drive. It was the second t-shirt they've ever done.
Nice.
Because they came to Melbourne 2002, I think, or 2003 actually, and played at the Art House, and we opened for them. I had a handful of t-shirts I made for our band, gave them to the guys and was chatting, and they're like, oh, we just did a shirt too. Like, it's so hilarious to think of Parkway being like, yeah, we just did a shirt. Like, you know, this is one of the biggest heavy bands on the planet. And I was there when they were like, I reckon we could sell a t-shirt. So
yeah, I know what that's like. I used to have a venue in Newcastle, and I had one of the first Parkway Drive shows, and I had Graham from Resist ring me to tell me to check out this band. And
now they're totally
this huge thing.
I know, right? It's crazy. So
it's crazy.
You always think about everyone else's salad days and you don't realize that you're living in yours or whatever. But then I was like, at the time, you know, we're playing these shows and we're playing with Parkway or whatever, opening up for them in 2003. But you know, the Big Day Out was still the biggest show in the country. You know, I'd been going to all ages shows all throughout high school. And you know, we got to play with She Had and Motor Race and these bands that I was like, wow, they've made it. And then to not to realize that I'm like right in the middle of this sort of revolution that was coming in the early 2000s of these heavy bands that became like stadium bands. So I'm just lucky that at the time I was sort of focused on, I like playing a band. So what can I do that allows me to pretty much just do the band? And so I realized designing merchandise, and I started screen printing t-shirts because that was something I knew how to do for other bands and sort of in a really lo-fi level, but I was like, oh, that would almost sustain me. So I was in university studying advertising and, you know, printing shirts and playing shows every weekend, had no real interest in entering the advertising world, like the corporate side of it. So all of my uni mates would be like, yeah, we're doing this and this. After they'd knock off from school, oh, we're going to go to the pub and, you know, hang out. And I'm like, I'm going to go to, you know, have you ever seen that place, the Art House? And they'd be like, oh yeah, what is that place? I'm like, I'm going there. I'll basically be there all weekend. I'll see you guys Monday. And it was like, it was quite a strange, you know, not at all claiming that I was like the only punk in the village, but it was very much like, oh, I'm not a part of this world. I like have this thing that I enjoy, and that was live music and specifically punk and hardcore music. And that was just such a big part of my life. So yeah, how did I end up doing art? Accidentally, pretty much. You know, it's, by necessity, because no one else was. And also, you know, it becomes financial. It becomes, stylistic. We wanted to control, you know, I feel like there's been a handful of times where my own projects that I've worked on, someone in the band has been like, oh, my mate can do a thing for us. And I go, okay. And then it comes back and I go, I should have said something. Like I couldn't, and then I realized like, oh man, I don't want to be a control freak, but I know how I wanted this to be. And that's not how it is. So yeah, it sort of became that. Yeah. So that's how I sort of got into doing art, was through being a musician, really.
And you and like we talked about off air, another artist that has already been on this series, Pat Fox. You and he are sort of the new breed of Australian graphic designers, album graphic and band graphic designers that are sort of coming up the ranks. And a lot of the acts, like you mentioned, a lot of the acts that were around back then and sort of became stadium bands, it's sort of happening again. We're starting to see a real flourish of great Australian, especially indie rock, you know, folk based, a lot of that sort of style that's going around the world at the moment. But a lot of those indie rock and indie punk bands are coming back into the fore, and it's bringing the artists, you know, you're able to control the style or influence the style that, you know, is shaping a lot of album collections, or in these days, phone images.
Exactly.
You know, the albums, and it's, yeah, pixels, exactly. And so it's really incredible, and it's really amazing to see, because it's not that common that you hear about it in Australia, that someone's actually able to make a living out of this. So it's really give it a great go.
Yeah, that's not to say, like, I definitely, you know, I don't make my living off doing album artwork, but it's at times it's been a big part of my sort of workload and by that my income, but it's also the music landscape is still adapting to the loss of CDs, really. Like it's an ongoing thing. And that comes, I've done other in the music industry, which I still feel like a kid, you know, when I go into any of these rooms with whoever from Sony or whatever, I'm like, oh my God, are they going to ask like, I don't have my pen license. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. But, you know, then I realized like, oh, I've been, you know, I've been at this for coming towards 20 years, you know, like, being involved in the music industry in that sense. And I've done stuff with music videos. I've done stuff with stage design, and it's all still adapting budgetarily to the change, you know, working with bands like Something for Kate, who really came through that period, you know, the glory days of, music video budgets and album sales and all these kind of things. And then getting to watch them adapt and watch the labels and things adapt to the way, you know, to bring income to a band, and merchandise being such a big leg of that is really probably where I cut my teeth. It's doing t-shirts for bands. I did it, but I've done hundreds and hundreds of t-shirts. And, but then, you know, you have someone like a Violent Soho that kind of, you know, it almost became, has in some ways like a clothing label, you know, the you sometimes at one point a few years ago, I felt like I could go to a music festival and that Violent Soho shirt, which is actually an album, a piece of album art, ironically, it's the Tinderbox EP graphic, which is that triangle with the skull in it. You know, that was everywhere. And I'm so stoked to see that. But then I see the next generation of those type of bands, this sort of slacker grunge rock kind of vibe. And I can see I've had a little effect on that. Like I can see some of my stylings in the versions of that. And then I think about myself at 16 doing designs for my bands, and I was basically parodying what a, you know, a Grinspoon or a, an Incubus or whatever these kind of graphics were. Cause in 2001 or 2000, that's what we were after kind of thing. So
you got it.
It's funny. Yes. The hunter becomes the hunted, you know, it's like, yeah, it's quite, and then I also realized, oh shit, I'm 35 now. Like it's, you know, it's time keeps on moving. It's not, but I'm just stoked that I still get to work with people who I could just consider friends, really. And it's, some of them were friends before we started working together. Other people I've started working with and become friends. Some of them were people I really admired and looked up to, like Something for Kate. And then I get to be a contemporary, you know, one of the first times I met with them for pitching on some stuff, I did a book for them for their 20 year anniversary. We were going through, they kept everything, which is amazing. And she put, Steph pulled out a big bag of fan mail. She's like, yeah, we don't really get fan mail anymore, but in the 90s and the early 2000s, we did. And she dumped a big bag out, hundreds of letters. And the one on the top was from my friend's sister, the guy in my band. And it was like,
nice.
Hi, we're coming to see you at Pushover 99 or whatever. You should check out my brother's band and hear it. And I was like, I was in that band that this letter is talking about. Not only was that, amazing. I was at that show and you signed this silk tie that I still have that's signed by Gordy from Friends of Rome and Steph from Something for Kate and all the, you know, cause I was a grommet at the show. Wearing a t-shirt and a tie like every other dickhead. And now I get to be on the other side of that, being like, how can we sell Violent Soho neckties at this show? You know,
it's amazing, so, isn't it? It's incredible. And you know, and it really shows how great the music industry is, where you can be that kid. And everyone that I've spoken to, so many people in this series I've spoken to started out as that kid. I've just interviewed, the guy who does all of Epitaph Records, and he used to do Victory Records as well. And he started as one of those kids. He literally left his car in a parking lot and went on tour with Midtown, who he barely knew. He'd only met that day because they needed a merch guy, and it started his whole career. So
totally. I'm always on the lookout to, you know, not just in a graphic design sense, but I paint and I work as an artist and a street artist and all these kind of varied projects. And I'm always on the lookout to try to identify myself, you know, like the younger version of me, and seeing, and also to, you know, not to try and help those kind of people. Cause I had a few people who really did help me in that way. And it kind of, you know, they're still out there. They might be, they're online lurking rather than hanging at the back door of the corner hotel trying to meet MXPX, but you know, they're around. So
they are around.
Yeah. I just think it's so cool. Like any young person that's actively trying to do that stuff is awesome.
No, 100%. And it's great to see that it's continued on, even in, like we say, where it's moved from being printed paper to pixels. And, you know, and one of the first acts, because I wanted to talk about the Something for Kate book, which you've already done, which is amazing, and we'll touch on the Parkway Drive book in a little bit. But I started looking at your career, and for context, everyone who's listening, thank you for listening. We have spoken a little bit online about the different artwork that Callum has done, and I thought I'd start right at the beginning from what I could see, be or around the start, which would be D's Nuts. Which is, JJ Peters, who's the frontman of D's Nuts, was previously the drummer in I Killed the Prom Queen, who, you know, have made a mark everywhere. Now, you worked on them on their first few releases, Rep Your Hood, Bout It, and This One's For You. I was really interested. Is JJ one of those people that you were talking about that you built a relationship with before you really got into art?
Oh, 100%. So I played drums in a band called Her Nightmare that was like a Hatebreed style kind of, yes. So that was like early, 2003 to about 2006 or seven. And then, I left the band and they did one record after that and then they kind of wrapped it up. But one of the first times that, like, in 2003, we got a support for Give Up the Ghost, which formerly American Nightmare, who were being supported by I Killed the Prom Queen. We were opening act on that. And I wrote to JJ over MySpace or something, or Friendster, who knows, and was like, hey, you know, I've seen you guys play. You're great. We're opening the show if you need to borrow any gear or whatever. And he's like, actually, I'm bringing my kit, and I'd rather, like, get it all set up beforehand, so do you want to use mine? And in my head, they were like a huge band. Well, they were a pretty big band at the time, but still relatively small to what they became. But this is in 2003, so the show was still at the Art House. But, you know, he's like, do you want to use mine? So literally it was like, you know, contemporaries being like, oh yeah, cool, I can borrow that, sweet, okay, I'll help him break it down. And we just sort of became friends, and then whenever they came to town, we'd like go to the show and hang out. And that led to me doing some t-shirts for them. So I did a whole bunch of t-shirts for I Killed the Prom Queen, which it's funny how fast the years go. But in those like 3 years, that felt like 10 years. And I would say, when did JJ start D's Nuts? I don't know, probably like 5 years ago. It's like, oh, it's 10, 11 years ago, you know? That was something where he wasn't even in charge of anything to do with the merch for Prom Queen. It was more of a Jonah thing, but, you know, then he branches out. You know, it was like some sort of soap opera at the time, like knowing, oh, and they've broken up and JJ's quit, he's going to do this thing. And it was all like, wow, because it was the center of our universe. And then he hit me up and was like, oh, he hit me up before he announced it all and was like, we went to Trippy Taco here in Melbourne and had some food. And he was like, I'm going to do a band. And I was like, oh, cool. Who's singing? And he's like, me. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, I'm actually doing everything. I don't have anyone else. And I was like, right. And he's like, but we want to do this demo. I've recorded the songs. I've played every instrument, and we did like before that record I did artwork on, we did a demo that was, I made a stencil. We stenciled 200 CDs in my little studio. We did a photocopied like fold up cover, and it was in a plastic sleeve kind of thing. And I think he just gave them away. I don't even know. And eventually those songs actually became the first, I think Rep Your Hood, is that what the first one's called? Yeah.
Yes,
like,
yes.
It was, yeah, those demos became that album, that EP. But yeah, he was just like, oh, I don't know, it's just this thing, I'm going to try it out. And now it's had, you know, a longer career than Prom Queen, you know, and hugely 100%. Successful, especially in Europe. I even ended up playing, I played a tour in the States. We did like 28 shows in 30 days across America.
Wow.
I played drums for him because I was living out in Seattle at the time. And their drummer had just left, and he hit me up saying, hey, we're doing this tour with Parkway, Bring Me the Horizon and Architects. And, we want to do
it. That's a pretty bad lineup, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, right? And, I was like, okay, well, I know half those dudes. That sounds cool. He's like, yeah, we want to do this poster for it. Can I pass on your details to Ollie? Like, he just hit me up about it, asking if I knew someone. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, who the hell's going to play drums for you? He's like, oh, we're still working it out. And I was like, well, I'm already here. Like, I don't need a visa if you want, like, whatever. And he's like, oh, shit. Okay. He's like, anyway, let me just pass on those poster details. And then, so I'm working on this poster. And then he's like, oh, and you're on the tour too. I was like, oh, shit. Okay. So.
Wow.
That's, you know, it's just like friends kind of lead to that stuff a lot of the time.
Mm.
And then without realizing it, that bank of work you're building up with your actual connections, people are watching from the outside. And, you know, that's how things come along later, like a, like Something for Kate, or like, Violent Soho, or, Alex Leahy, or any of those things. They were people that were familiar with my work, not necessarily knowing that my work was basically friends helping friends, you know?
But that's great, because it leads to this whole new part of your career. And on the D's Nuts stuff, the one that, and you mentioned it to me, you said, look, the one that's the best story, or the best, you know, the best one to talk about is the album This One's For You.
Yes.
I love that, because it brings back, it instantly takes me to one of my favorite album art designs by a man named Bob Mould. And of course, you'd know Bob Mould, he's from Husker Du, mm-hmm. and if you're into that, you would be into Husker Du, no doubt. And it reminds me so much of Workbook. Do you know the Workbook album cover?
No, not off the top of my head. I'm Googling right now as we talk.
If you Google it, what it is he's got a, it's like a little tray.
I recognize that. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally recognize it.
And it's got that same look and feel, right? It's got the little compartments and the different aspects. And the minute I saw it, and when I saw it back in the day, I was like, Bob Mould, I know that. And then, you know, years later, I get to look at it again and go, Bob Mould. And it's great that it's got, you know, and, you know, obviously not meant to be, but it's got that same symmetry. Yeah. So I was really, really curious as to how that came about, because it does look like little bits and pieces from,
So,
from the combined history, I would say.
Exactly. So at that point, they had done a couple of records, or they were trying to be a bit more of a, they were still like a party band, but he was obviously more like, oh, we're an actual band. You know, we're a serious band that plays, you know, tours and has whatever. And so he came to me saying, hey, we want to do a record. What do you think? And actually Pat Fox, who we referenced earlier, he will tell you that I'm often like, man, record art sucks. I can only work within this 12 by 12. It's like a small area to work with and blah, blah, blah. And cause he puts so much into his records and there's so many little Easter eggs and all these things. And he kind of, inspired me to like think a bit harder about those things actually ongoing. Cause there was a couple of jobs where I would even pass on to him. I'd say like, this band wants to do this, but I know you could kill it. I don't think I would do it justice or whatever. And vice versa, like it's really good. I like that, it feels to me in general, I haven't come across many creatives in Australia that are, they're too, it's not too many secret recipes kicking around. Like everyone's pretty open to be like, hey man, you know, I think this would be better for you, or, you know, could you help me with this?
It's great, isn't it?
But, it's awesome. So with that one, I went to JJ's like, hey, we're going to sell them. What do you think? And I was like, I want to make something like, and photograph it, like no Photoshop, just do it all in camera. James Hartley, who's a photographer, really good friend of mine. We were just buddies and he had been sort of touring with them occasionally and taking some shots. He eventually went on to tour with Parkway extensively and he's done all kinds of, he's living out in the States now and touring with bands still, but doing a lot of other photography as well. I called him up. He was friends with JJ as well. And I said, hey, I want to do this album, but I'm just going to build a thing. And like, we just need to shoot it from above and I just want to tweak it all in camera, not Photoshop stuff in after. And I'm going to paint the name on wood and that will be like, I'm not going to drop the text in later. It's all physical. It's an actual thing that exists. And, JJ was really into it. He was like super excited by the idea. He's like, man, I hadn't even, cause I kind of pitched it to him. I went away and came back and was like, you know, we weren't really doing very official pitches at that time. And I was like, I've got an idea. Let me like put it together for you and come back to you. And so I just did some basic like thumbnail sketches and, I sent it through and I was like, so it's this. And I was like, but it's wood and I'm going to build all these dividing boxes. And can you start saving up? I'm like, I don't drink gin. Can you start saving your gin bottles? And he was living in Melbourne at the time. You start saving this and make a list of what you want to be in there. Like, you know, and at the time, you know, what represents the band. And that was like, you know, the party band. There's a lot of like, there's like cigarettes and alcohol in there and like a bunch of like little trinkets and stuff that I had kicking around. I think there's some like guitar picks and different stuff in there. So he was really into the idea. And then as I started building it in my studio, I was like, yeah, I think this could really work. You know, it feels, I said to him, you know, I want people to not just flash past the album cover. I wanted to stop and explore it a little bit. And people would say like, hey, I picked out that there's actually a little, you know, such and such in here that I didn't notice the first time or whatever. And, that was exactly the aim. And luckily JJ was really into that, and Hartley and I just hung out, you know, messing around. It's actually in a video. I feel at the time it was, you know, when everyone was sort of starting to do some digital content, I guess.
Yes.
And so we did a video. We shot the album cover and we set the camera up above it. And there's a video somewhere where Hartley, we laid him on his back and I rolled him into frame on a skateboard. So his head just appeared in the top corner with a cigarette. And then a hand came in and lit it and it kind of rolled back out, which, you know, very revolutionary at the time. This is sort of digital content as well as, but I really wanted to get across to people like, this is a real thing that exists.
A real thing.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. One day I came in the studio because I had the parts to it kicking around. I think I gave JJ the, this one's for you sign, but I'm pretty sure that one day I came in and someone had cut the D's nuts in half and turned it into a shelf to hold a bunch of paint cans on. And I was like, eh, well, you know, easy come, easy go. That's what it is.
it's been repurposed.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, exactly. And it was all, you know, it was from found materials anyway. And this, yeah, so that was really my first, now that I realize it was really my first foray into making something for an album cover, which is something that I've focused on, and I have expanded on that idea with Parkway and with Alex Leahy, and also just with my artwork in general is sort of building things out of wood and mixed sign writing with objects. So yeah, it's quite cool to have done that. And obviously they've done a bunch of albums since then. Pat Fox has done a whole heap. Hartley worked on one of those as well. Binge and Purgatory, Hartley shot photos. Actually, Hartley shot photos for pretty much all of them, I think. But
Binge and Purgatory because you've got the skull. And of course the skull is re-represented in Binge and Purgatory.
It's got that, the jawbone, like the element of it. And I do feel like, you know, the band stepped up on that record and in their career. And it's like, I like the one that we did, but that one is like an evolution on that. And they worked with an awesome artist from New York called Tyrell Winston, who he's a street forager and he collects all these, pieces of garbage essentially and makes art out of them. So all of the little bags and cigarette butts and stuff is things that were collected for that. So yeah, I like to think that, you know, this was a good kicking off point for D's Nuts to kind of be like, you know, our album art can be something special.
And it definitely is. And it's great that you can look back, and especially a band that's had a career like they have where, you know, like you said, like it was just a one man show. And I remember when I Killed the Prom Queen split and it was a huge thing, and Jonah, the guitarist, went on overseas and joined bands, left bands, crisis happened with singers, a whole bunch of stuff. And it was sort of one of the biggest things to happen in our little Australian music industry at the time. And then to see JJ really, really go on and make D's Nuts and then make it into a band that are doing really well, that are touring the world is incredible.
Yeah.
And it's great for someone like you because you get to have a piece of that segment of that, you know, right at the start, and you get to see it reinterpret it again, and it's absolutely incredible. And another one, I wanted to jump from them to another act, and this was the band are called 50 Lions, self-titled EP back in 2009, released through Resist Records. And the reason I wanted to mention this one is the actual album artwork, from what I believe, was done by Brent Brown, and then who's an acclaimed Australian artist and has done lots of work for bands like Friends of Rome, and I believe you did the packaging and the inside for that, did you?
That's got, it's the EP, it's got like a lion on the front, I think. Is that right? I should be better across that. So I ended up doing a lot of layouts in general. They did a vinyl release of it, which is always, you know, laying out other people's artwork on records is an interesting one because you don't want to mess with their integrity, but sometimes it doesn't quite fit and you're going to have to tweak stuff.
Make it fit.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, as much as I've done artwork for bands and been like, you know, given very much freedom and creative director, I can also just be a keyboard, robot and like put things together as well. And I've been, you know, I've had all variations of that. I've done the like 11th hour rework of artwork for bands that something's blown out on, or you know, someone was supposed to be doing it and they dropped the ball or whatever. And then, you know, it's trying to make a living out of, doing creative work means that you sometimes are doing some pretty just boring kind of stuff, but it's great to have had a part in not just designing these albums, but, you know, helping yeah. my friends piece together stuff, you know? Yeah.
And it's amazing for someone like me who's not an artist at all, but the name Ben Brown is very iconic, especially sort of in the punk scene in Australia. And, you know, to be able to yeah. do anything with any of his art to me would be something that's fascinating. This episode, that's what's fascinating. How great is Callum? Such a down to earth guy who started as a fan, then a musician, and finally as an artist. We have so much to cover in episode 2 and 3 of this chat with Mr. Preston. Please make sure you check them out. And one of my favorite things is to cross promote with other artists and other artists that I've interviewed. We chatted quite a bit about Pat Fox, and you can hear his incredible story and the artwork he has done for D's Nuts and many of the other bands on his episode. Check it out on Undercover's podcast. Pat is featured in season 1. Next up is Parkway Drive, Alex Leahy, Violent Soho, and much more. Until then.
Vibe. Machine.